And now for something completely different.
It's a rich man's world. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal, the full story, the whole enchilada, the Lance Roberts Show. It's money, markets, life. Now, back by popular demand, it's the Lance Roberts Show.
And welcome back. It is, of course, Tuesday morning here on your drive into work, 6:06 as we get the day underway. Talking about the world at large. A lot of things going on today. But most importantly, it is Hump Day Eve. So I ran into a lady in an elevator yesterday, and I said, "Hey, how are you doing today?" I always ask people in the elevator how they're doing. And she says, "Well, it's Monday." I go, "Well, just, you know, look on the bright side. Tuesday will be here before you know it." So this is, see, everybody's like this. We're always looking for the next day. Mm-hmm. So Hump Day Eve, got to keep the positive spin on things here.
I got too much to do today to worry about tomorrow.
I have too much to do every day. Yeah. Anyway, a lot of stuff to get into today, and a few stories. Let's check in on the markets here real quick. Markets are pointing up nicely this morning as, and this is something we're going to talk about more in depth tomorrow as well, of course, is the Federal Reserve is on deck. Big meeting tomorrow from the Federal Reserve. And, of course, the big question is, of course, whether or not they are going to lift interest rates. And, of course, the expectation is they will not hike interest rates at tomorrow's meeting. But it was interesting because as we've now paused on interest rate hikes, and of course, the Fed has become much more dovish, which has helped lift the markets from the December 24th lows, where we had this very large correction last year. You know, we've had several discussions here on the show about how quickly both the Trump administration as well as the Federal Reserve reversed course on policy strategy when the markets cracked. And remember, we talked about back in October, the Federal Reserve was saying, "Hey, we're nowhere close to neutral. We've got to keep raising rates. The economy is growing strongly, so we've got to raise rates to offset the strongly growing economy to keep inflation under control." And of course, the Trump administration at the time was very much pressing on trade tariffs and this trade war. And of course, after the market tanks by 20% between October and December, all of a sudden, a big reversal, right? Fed's now, "Oh, yeah, we're done hiking rates. And in fact, we're done reducing our balance sheet. We're about where we need to be now." And of course, there's been a very rapid reversion, of course, on the stance on trade. Now we're in a rush to get the trade deal done. And so, of course, that's lifted asset prices. And today, markets are looking positive. The Dow's looking to open up about 125 points. The S&P's looking to open up near 11. So again, we continue this push. Now, we've got an article out on our website this morning. It's our Technically Speaking post that we do every Tuesday, talking about a look at full market cycles and, you know, where we are in this current one. And as we talk about, you know, the economy, the markets, you know, political policy, et cetera, there's a lot of things that drive into the long-term health and growth of an economy and, of course, subsequently markets. And I thought it was interesting. Bloomberg had an interesting article out this morning talking about the fact that a recession is coming. This is the title. I'm not making this up. A recession is coming and maybe a bear market as well. First of all, whenever you have a recession in the economy, you always have a bear market in stocks because of the relationship between corporate profitability and asset prices. That's just, people invest in stocks because they're buying an expectation on future growth of the company. And of course, when there's a recession in the economy, you subsequently also have a bear market in stocks because of the revision of the belief in what you were paying for profits for that company. In other words, you know, it's fantasy becomes reality again, right? We always tend to get a little bit exuberant during market peaks and late stage market cycles about, well, the market's just going to continue to do, you know, this forever into the future. And then when it doesn't turn out to be the case, we have this revision in expectations. So the reality is that during bear markets, during recessions, stocks fall on average about 33% on average, going back to 1871. So if we look at all the bear markets throughout history, If we look at just post-World War II, it's still well over 20%. So, you know, the issue is that we are in a very late-stage economy. Things are happening on a global basis. We're seeing global economic slowdowns. We're seeing weakness in yields. And what's important about yields are is that the bond market is a very good indicator and a very good way to look at whether or not the economy is growing strongly or not. There is a very close relationship between the direction and trend of interest rates and the level relative to economic growth. So, for instance, we go back in history and let's go back to 1980 when Reagan was in office. Reagan enters office and, of course, inflation and interest rates are running 12, 13, 14%, but economic growth was running between 8 and 9% at the time. So interest rates, inflation had gotten ahead of the rate of economic growth, and that was the concern. We were having kind of an expectation of interest rates and inflation well above the level of economic growth. So, of course, this is where Paul Volcker and Ronald Reagan got to work trying to lower interest rates and lower the rate of inflation. And ever since then, we've been increasing the rate of debt and deficit spending that we're doing. That's another issue relating to long-term economic growth. But economic growth since then has declined from about 8 to 9% down to roughly 2% today. If we take a look at nominal GDP growth, and of course what we're looking at this year in the economy, is we're looking for nominal GDP growth to be around 3%, whereas interest rates are around 3%. And that's about where it should be. So when you look on a global basis, you're looking at a lot of yields on government debt around the world, close to zero. And that's not surprising given the fact that global economic growth is very weak. But here's the problem. Countries haven't figured out a way to stimulate economic growth. We've tried all types of monetary interventions. We've tried all types of other tricks, and parlor tricks and et cetera, to try to stimulate economic growth, but none of it's worked. And we continue to have this division between economic growth and jobs and job creation and the division of wealth. And this has become the rallying call for people like Ocasio-Cortez talking about we need to tax the wealthy more. We need to solve this inequality gap. We need to create a better, we need to change the world dynamic because, well, the one we've got isn't working anymore. And it's not working because of the debt. But we'll come back. We'll talk some more about this. I've got a few pieces that go along. It's kind of an integrated story this morning that we'll get to, but I've got a few pieces about how this all ties together from Illinois to millennials. And, of course, even to the world at large. So don't go away. More of the Lance Roberts Show coming up right after the break.
Let's go down and check out the show. Yeah, there were dancing and singing and moving to the grooving. And just when it hit me, somebody turned around and shouted, play that fucking music, white boy. Play that fucking music, right?
Catch Lance Roberts podcast later at LanceRobertsShow.com.
Did last year's market declines cause you to lose sleep? If so, it's because you have more risk in your portfolio than you realize. And it's time to reevaluate your long-time investing strategy with RIA Advisors. Our disciplined approach can help eliminate unnecessary risk. We do that by having both a buy and sell discipline. Does your advisor do that? If you think it's time to work with an advisor who puts your interests first, it's time for real investment advice. RIA Advisors, 281-501-1791. RIAAdvisors.com.
They just told us right away that we're going to house you, we're going to feed you, and every single one of his medical bills is just all taken care of.
Saber que el tratamiento es completamente gratis nos quita una preocupación de encima.
We have phenomenal research, outstanding clinical care, and the generosity of public, which allow us to treat patients regardless of what it takes. And that's what makes St. Jude so magical.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because the only thing a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Doctors send us the toughest cases to be treated at St. Jude, and our patients come from all over the world.
When we come here, they told me, don't worry, everything's been taken care of.
We could never repay St. Jude for what they've given us.
Because of you.
Gracias a ti.
Because of you.
There is St. Jude.
In today's crazy world, there's only one thing we can be assured of. No one gets out alive. That's why Schlitzberger & Daughters Monument Company encourages people to plan ahead. I'm Kim Schlitzberger.
And I'm Maria Schlitzberger. And at Schlitzberger & Daughters Monument Company, we are well acquainted with guiding families through the process of purchasing a memorial. Call us at 713-926-1785, and our staff can educate you about planning ahead.
If you choose your cemetery while grieving, you may not think to ask hard questions about what costs are entailed and what options you have. Take the time to sit down with your family and plan your final resting place.
Pre-planning, choosing a cemetery, and investigating your options will help. We are a fourth-generation monument company, family-owned and family-operated. Call Schlitzberger & Daughters Monument Company, 713-926-1785, or go online at schlitzbergers.com.
You may not remember our number, but Schlitzberger is hard to forget.
Back at 6:17 on your drive to work this morning. This afternoon at noon, we have a podcast that we're releasing on our website. Simply go by realinvestmentadvice.com, click on the YouTube tab, and you can get our latest podcast coming out at noon today. It is with Adam Johnson. He's an energy oil specialist, and we were talking specifically about the oil markets, where oil prices are headed. We talked a little bit about the transition to new green deals, etc. That's on our website today at noon. If you go to our website, realinvestmentadvice.com, click on the YouTube tab and subscribe to our channel. When we release it at noon, you will be notified by email. Every time we release podcasts, we'll notify you by email that those have been posted for you to watch. And we have a lot of good interviews in the pipeline. There's a bunch of great interviews on the website already. So if you've missed some of our previous interviews with people like Nami Prinz and Simon Constable and a variety of others, we just recently had a great one last week with Jeffrey Sherman from DoubleLine talking about interest rates, the economy, markets, MMT, Modern Monetary Theory, this new Ocasio-Cortez idea. That's all on our website, and simply go by Real Investment Advice, click the YouTube tab at the top, and they're all there for you. You know, speaking of that, I do want to migrate a little bit in our story that we were talking about a minute ago about this transition of the economy and, you know, why we continue to have this very slow rate of economic growth. And part of that has given rise to, you know, these ideas. Well, you know, we have all these people sitting outside the labor force, so we need to fix that. We need to transition our economy to something differently now because, you know, we've got these low rates of economic growth and we have this big diversion in wealth between, you know, the rich and the poor in this country. We need to fix these things. And this has now become a government issue, right? The government needs to solve these things. And so, again, I've got several stories here. These all tie together, so just kind of follow along with me for a moment. Part of it ties into what we were talking about with Adam Johnson. And part of that is this transition away from the energy sector into this idea that we can solve everything with green energy. And, you know, so when you start talking about, you know, green energy and what it will do for you, you also have to remember that there's a lot of our economy that's driven by fossil fuels. And the important part of the economic growth, and we take a look at the amount of job growth created in this country by the oil and gas energy sector, nearly a quarter of all the jobs created, and you're talking about not just when somebody gets hired on at an oil company, but it's all the downtrend, all the down cycle jobs from that, all the related jobs created from a guy that's out there drilling a well, creates a lot of other jobs. About one quarter of all the jobs created since the financial crisis have been in direct response to the increased production of oil and gas here in the United States. The other side of it is that, you know, also that there's the ancillary part of this is that if you want to create electricity, a lot of that also comes from the fossil fuel industry, either from oil or from coal or from gas. But we did talk about this with Adam Johnson a bit, and as we start talking about the change, in these ideas of moving more towards green energy, I asked him why we don't look, while Ocasio-Cortez and others are talking about using solar power and wind power, one of the most abundant resources that we have in the United States is natural gas. My wife sells auto gas, which is liquefied propane for school buses, et cetera. And we talked about this, but we have this abundant resource of green energy. And here, let me just jump to the clip on number 34. This is Adam Johnson talking about why we don't use natural gas.
Number one, safety, which is not entirely fair, but the heating oil lobby had an incredibly effective ad campaign that ran up here in the Northeast for, 15 years. Oil heat, it's just better, right? That was the tagline. And it was effectively trying to get people not to switch to natural gas, but instead to use good old reliable heating oil. Heating oil never explodes, et cetera, right? That's the argument. So I think there's still this notion in the back of our minds, whether it's fair or not, that somehow driving a car around with natural gas is somehow unsafe. I think the other issue was hard to get the same kind of torque or horsepower out of a nat gas engine. So I think the safety thing, whether that's fair or not, and then the horsepower argument, which is arguably more fair, that's, I think, what's held nat gas back.
We have, again, my wife sells propane, auto gas, which has the horsepower, has the torque, is safe. It's being used in school buses. Now, if you're worried about, safety, and you're toting a bunch of kids around on a school bus, that would really be one of the areas where you would really want to kind of focus on making sure it's safe. And propane has been proven to be safe and efficient and works. And it's also cheaper and it's clean. So, we have solutions, but yet these are the solutions that we ignore in this idea of the transformation of the United States in a variety of ways. Well, of course, after Ocasio-Cortez came out with her, Green New Deal, talking about the transformation and the elimination of the energy sector entirely in this economy, it didn't take long for another city to jump on the bandwagon, one that is arguably, as blue can be. Coming out with a 365-page bill that covers the entirety of the green energy spectrum. And, of course, under the bill, the natural gas industry would be history. Fossil fuels would be history. And this would all be replaced by 40 million solar panels, 2,500 wind turbines, along the side of $20 billion in new infrastructure over the next decade. So, they're talking about billions upon billions of dollars being spent to transform this particular city into the green energy mecca of the future. Now, this particular city is one that is so vastly underfunded in their pension that they are now coming up with new schemes to take taxpayer money to try to fund their pension. The city itself is so financially broke that they've even had to sell off, basically just abandon parts of their city in terms of providing police services because they couldn't afford it. We're talking about Illinois. So here's the city that is so financially destitute in so many ways, now talking about spending not just a couple of billion. We're talking about billions upon billions of dollars that will have to come from taxpayers ultimately to transform a city into the green mecca energy system of the future. But this is the view of individuals today, is it simply people, and in particular our government, is simply that debt doesn't matter. But debt does matter. And again, back to our story. What does this have to do with our story? Well, our story is of the problem of slow economic growth. Why interest rates remain near 2% or lower in many cases. And again, we take a look around the world. Vast numbers of countries have interest rates at zero or less. Economic growth remains very low, if not negative in some cases. And everybody's kind of scratching their head trying to figure out a new method to try to fix these problems, right? Well, one of the problems is that it's because young people, they don't want to work. No, that's not true. They do want to work. They want to work differently, but they do want to work. You know, people want that brass ring. You know, the American dream that was the prosperity of the baby boom generation. Everybody's looking at that now saying, that's what we want. Why can't we have it? Well, it's because of the debt. But yet we don't want to do the one thing that we need to take care of, which is to resolve our debt issue. We're going to resolve our debt issue, apparently, by issuing more debt. This seems to be the simplest case. Well, I'm already in debt up to this point, so what's a few extra billion or trillion? But see, this has now become the running motto of the administrations. You know, for 8 years under the previous administrations, Republicans railed about the lack of financial constraint. I interviewed congressmen and senators, all of them saying the same thing. You know, we've got control of the purse strings. We're going to rein in the budget. We're going to do all these things to control our spending and get, you know, get us back onto a fiscal path of solvency. Yet as soon as that administration is out of office, the new one comes in. Now we no longer are concerned about the debt or the deficit. In fact, spending more money is better. But yet the issue becomes the same thing. Why can't we get more economic growth? We get little pops of economic growth because of hurricanes and natural disasters, which, by the way, require more government spending, roughly to the tune of $150 billion of debt that we're now going to have to pay back. We've increased our deficit from about $480 billion to almost $1 trillion in the course of the last 2 years because of that. And we're going to solve that problem by continuing to issue more debt. But we can't figure out why we can't get stronger rates of economic growth. And this is the big conundrum for the Federal Reserve. I told you, this is a big winding story, but it all ties together. Federal Reserve is going to meet on Wednesday of this week to talk about raising interest rates. They can't, they won't, because, well, they're taking a look at the economic growth. Economic growth is weakening in many sectors of the U.S. economy right now. And a lot of that has to do with exports. A lot of it has to do with global international trade. A lot of it has to do with our trade war, and that's impacted a lot of domestic companies. About 40 to 50% of corporate profits now come from international dealings, exports. But when we come back from the break, we'll continue with our story because the Trump administration has a couple of new ideas to maybe also solve this problem. Misguided ideas, nonetheless, but we'll talk about them when we come back from the break. Don't go away.
Want a longer talk with Lance about your money? Request a personal one-on-one at LanceRobertsShow.com.
Hi, this is Richard Rosso.
And this is Danny Ratliff.
RIA Advisors Financial Lunch and Learn series continues.
This month, you can learn from informative, helpful sessions on the five myths of diversification and savvy Social Security planning.
The Financial Lunch and Learn sessions are free and will even provide the lunch.
Register today for our next Lunch and Learn at RIAAdvisors.com.
Click on the Events tab for the link. RIAAdvisors.com.
RIAAdvisors.com.
Start your mornings with the Chris Salcedo Show.
I used to live down the dial a couple of notches during this time period in the morning, but I think I found a new home. And it's why I'm going to tune in. You gave them some very tough questions, you know, some of the toughest questions that I've heard an interviewer give a seasoned politician like that. And just like all seasoned politicians, before they answer the question, they run interference.
The Chris Salcedo Show, 7 to 9 a.m. on AM 700 KSEV.
Message and data rates may apply up to 5 messages a month. TNC and privacy policy found at gogriddy.com/TC. Reply help for help or stop to cancel.
Would you rather buy something at wholesale or retail prices? Of course, wholesale. Everyone knows how much money you save cutting out the middleman. Well, now with Gritty, you can get your electricity at discounted wholesale prices. That's right, wholesale electricity. So, what's Gritty? We're a power provider, but different. We don't mark up the price of your electricity. You get it wholesale at the market price, and you save big. Last year, our members saved an average of 22% by going wholesale. That's more than $350 of savings per year. Gritty is like a club. You pay a $10 monthly membership and we deliver your electricity at cost with no markups. And now, if you text MEMBER to 797979, we'll give you your first month's membership free. Now, get your first month with Gritty free. Just text MEMBER to 797979 and start saving. Text MEMBER to 797979.
Dan Patrick for my friend Louis Florey and Ability Tree Experts.
Spring is here and summer just around the corner, which means it's time to deep root fertilize your trees in addition to spraying for insects and disease. Let Ability Trees help maintain their value and repair all damage. Fed and pruned tree will be less susceptible to wind damage and uprooting. Caring for the beautiful and valuable trees on your property that you can't replace should be done by experts. And the experts I use, it's very clear. It's Ability Tree Experts and Louis Florey, my friend for over 30 years. Gosh, this guy is the pro when it comes to taking care of trees. You know, pruning is important for the health of your trees. And pruning limits resistance to spring storms and allows the sun and fresh air into the canopy. Trees can be in distress several months without showing any signs. So don't wait to protect your investment at 281-441-4179, 281-441-4179, or visit their website at abilitytrees.com. Right now, Ability Trees is giving a deep root feeding with every tree pruned.
Ability Trees, Houston's leading tree care professional.
KSEV and its advertisers want to thank you, the listeners, for all your continued support. Without you supporting our advertisers, there would not be a Voice of Texas. We stand behind our clients. And if you're looking to boost and grow your business, join the great team at KSEV and its loyal audience by calling a member of our sales staff at 281-588-4800. That's 281-588-4800. KSEV, loyal listeners and dependable advertisers, are the voice of Texas.
We've got partly to mostly sunny skies in store for today. We'll top out at 72 degrees, then clear to partly cloudy, low 49 tonight. And sun and some clouds again for tomorrow and Thursday. Highs are going to be in the mid-70s. With the KSCV Weather Center forecast, I'm Heather Thayer.
And welcome back to the show. It's 6:33. I need to do a on-air correction here. We're talking about the bill that is currently working its way through the Illinois General Assembly, and I said city, and I meant state. So my apologies. The state of Illinois, not the city of Illinois, happens when you're doing stream of consciousness type work, right? So, yeah, exactly. Back to work here, though. Let's continue on with our story here, because as we kind of look at what's happening around the world, and we bring this back home domestically to what we're talking about now, you know, one of the big conundrums is, again, as we were talking about a second ago, is this issue of weak economic growth. And again, we're going to watch economic growth in the first quarter of this year be somewhere close to zero. And, you know, we're likely to see that bump up to around 2% in the second quarter. In other words, what we'll wind up with when we look at the year-on-year growth of the U.S. economy at the end of 2019 will most likely be an economic growth rate of around 2%, which is where we've been over not just the last decade, but since the turn of the century. Boy, that makes you sound old. Turn of the century.
Back in the day.
Exactly. 18 years ago. So that's one of the big conundrums. And, of course, the White House is seeking ways to try to get more people back to work. And, of course, one of the issues is that when we talk about employment growth and the unemployment rate, so currently right now the unemployment rate's roughly about 4%, which means that theoretically 96% of everybody in the country is working. We know that's not the case. One out of four households are on some form of government support, et cetera, so forth and so on. We know the stats, right? So that we're not, this isn't an illusion to anyone. But the labor force participation rate remains right around 63% and has been stuck there for quite some time. And we can't seem to get more people back into the labor force. Now, there's a few things that fit into that. Of course, we do have, the issue of individuals retiring as they get older. Baby boomers are moving up. So they are retiring, but we have a lot of new influx coming in into the job market in terms of immigration, as well as our youth, millennials, which are a larger group than actual baby boomers. at this point. So as they move into the labor market, they're replacing baby boomers that are retiring. So, you know, the argument, well, it's because retirees, really doesn't make a lot of sense. And more importantly, if we take a look at job growth, right, how many jobs do we create every month, right? We create about 180 to 200,000 jobs a month, which ironically is exactly the same rate at which new people enter the labor force every single month. So in other words, our job growth has been simply a function of economic growth and, of course, the absorption of new individuals entering the population. So, you know, it's not surprising that we kind of stabilize. And this is what's been going on. Well, again, instead of focusing on the issues that need to be resolved to allow for more robust economic growth, will lead to more job creation, et cetera, which part of that has, a lot of that has to do with debt and the impact of debt on economic growth. You know, we keep trying to come out with ideas to solve the problems that don't address the issue, right? So, in other words, think about being very sick. I'm very sick. I've got a really bad disease. Now, there's a cure for some diseases, right? You can go get medicine to cure certain diseases, viruses, etc. Well, we have a couple choices. We can just treat the symptoms. We can take aspirin. We can take some cough medicine. We can try to treat the symptom. But until we go and actually attack the virus, we're not going to solve the problem. Well, this is the way government approaches the issue of the economy and other issues, is that instead of attacking the problem, instead of attacking the virus, which in this case is debt, what we continue to do is try to treat the symptoms. And here, let me just go through a couple of proposals here. The White House and the government, I'm reading this. This is from a Wall Street Journal article out today. The White House said the government could encourage greater labor force participation if it advanced policies that help reduce the cost of childcare, giving women greater incentive to work. Women in their late 20s and 30s have been driving up the labor force participation rate of prime age workers, those between 25 and 54. However, the overall labor force participation rate for women remains quite below the rate of men. Okay, so first of all, we want to change the dynamic of women participating in the labor force. That's fine. So we want more women to work. Nothing wrong with that. So how are we going to do that? Well, we have to provide incentives, and we need to reduce the cost of childcare. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to use government debt to provide a program to help supplement childcare cost, right? So more debt to try to solve a problem of getting women back into the labor force. Now, this article goes on. Now, I have four kids, okay? My wife has always worked a full-time job from the time that they were babies. Right. So we paid for childcare. We paid for tutors. We've paid for a variety of issues. And my wife has worked a very successful career. So have I. But one of the biggest issues was always finding good quality healthcare. I mean, these are people that are taking care of your children. So you want to make sure that they are respectable and trustworthy. Right. So we went through a lot of you know, work to try to make sure they were good, honest people and that, you know, they weren't going to run off with our kids or mistreat them, et cetera. So part of the issue here to provide more childcare for women so we can get women back into the labor force, A, we're going to use debt to provide more childcare credits, number one. Number two, let's change the regulations to impose minimum standards on providers so that we can increase the number in the labor force. In other words, let's reduce the requirements of people that are qualified to be childcare specialists. Let's reduce those standards, decrease those standards so that more people can get into this field and have a career at it. I'm not sure that's a good idea. Let me put it this way. We're going to reduce the standards required for brain surgeons. for neurosurgeons, cardiovascular surgeons. Maybe just 1 year of medical school will be enough, and they can become surgeons. Skip the residencies. That's just really kind of a waste of time. They can learn on the job. It's like that. Have you seen that Geico? I think it's a Geico commercial with a doctor that comes in and he says, "Hey, guess who just got reinstated?" And he says, the doctor asks the patient, "Nervous?" And the guy says, "Yeah, I'm nervous." He says, "Me too. Don't worry about it. We'll be fine." You know, that's what we're talking about here. I think.
And you say 15%.
And you say 15%. Yeah. Okay is just not okay. The report pointed to a Federal Reserve study as evidence that child care is connected to parents' labor force participation decisions. No kidding. First of all, there's a lot of women. My wife is one of them in particular. She works because we've made a choice in our family to have a certain lifestyle. She doesn't have to work. If she didn't want to, we would have to change our lifestyle, but she doesn't have to work. She could not work and stay home with the kids all day. That's her choice to work. There's a lot of women who choose to stay at home and raise their children. They believe that is the best use of their time. There's lots of men that also believe that having a stay-at-home parent to raise children is a good thing. In fact, like let's be honest, this is a new society that we live in today. There's a lot of men that are now stay-at-home husbands because the wife earns more than he did in his career. Her career pays more, so he stays home with the kids because they believe that raising their children and having a full-time parent is extremely important for the health and welfare of the child. Also, homeschooling. It's another issue. The study, though, according to the Federal Reserve, found that more than 60% of working-age women who aren't working or are working part-time and have a young child said childcare played an important role in their decision. Yeah, because the cost of childcare is incredibly expensive. So they simply say, look, I can go get a job and I can make $30,000 a year or $35,000 or whatever the job is, but we're going to pay out $24,000 a year in childcare. Once I subtract out, taxes and transportation back and forth to work, food, eating out, et cetera, because I have to get lunch while I'm at work, et cetera, whatever the things are, when they do the math, they say, you know what, babe, it's cheaper for you to stay at home. We actually come out ahead. So, but again, while it's important to try to get more people out into the labor force, using government policy to do that, that accrues more debt, isn't the actual issue. The issue comes down more to household finances and the lack of financial education in many cases about households and how they've run up debt and how they've impacted themselves through a variety of issues. Student loan debt being one of those issues. But guess what? That's an issue that's becoming more prevalent every single day. Quick break. We'll come back. Wrap up the show. Got a few headlines out for the day. Get you started and get your workday going. Markets are pointing up right now this morning, up about 11 points on the S&P, about 114 on the Dow. Again, kind of expectations for the Federal Reserve meeting tomorrow. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Lance Roberts Show right here on The Voice of Texas. Forgot where I was for a second. And at our website, realinvestmentadvice.com. We'll be right back.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for Lance's newsletter now at lancerobertshow.com.
Hi, this is Danny Ratliff.
And this is Richard Rosso.
RIA Advisors Financial Lunch and Learn series continues.
This month, you can learn from informative, helpful sessions on the five myths of diversification and savvy Social Security planning.
The Financial Lunch and Learn sessions are free.
And we'll even provide the lunch.
Register today for our next Lunch and Learn at RIAAdvisors.com.
Click on the Events tab for the link. RIAAdvisors.com.
RIAAdvisors.com.
A must-have news feed for conservatives.
Keep up to date on the key conservative issues with the KSEV Facebook page. From the news you need to know to the topics that KSEV listeners are talking about to KSEV events, there's a lot to like and a lot to share. Go to facebook.com/KSEV700 or find the link at KSEVradio.com. Thanks for listening to KSEV Radio. Now, join the conversation online. Facebook.com/KSEV700.
Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Dan, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Brian, and we're honored to have you on KSEV AM700 in Houston.
Governor, so many people sit outside border states and want to tell us what you think. The polls show Texas is about 50-50 on building a wall. Where do you stand?
I'm all in because I know the fact, and I know it's not a manufactured crisis. It's a manufactured cover-up by Pelosi and the Democrats.
The Brian Kilmeade Radio Show, every weekday morning from 9 to 11 on AM 700 KSEV.
The Knights of Columbus Council 14700 invite you to their annual award-winning Lenten Fish Fry every Friday till April 12th, 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the St. Michael's Catholic Church School, 1801 Sage Road. Adult plates are just $10. Shrimp or combo fish shrimp plates are $15, and children's plates $6. The Catholic Daughters of America will also be selling desserts. Once again, every Friday till April 12th at St. Michael's Catholic Church School, 1801 Sage Road. All proceeds benefit Knights of Columbus Charities.
Nolan Ryan for American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Let me ask you a serious question. How are you going to stay cool this summer? American Standard Air, it's a smart choice. Cool and efficient today, cool and efficient tomorrow. American Standard Air, it's been my brand for over 15 years. Make it your brand today. Staying cool in Texas is smart. Comfort the way you like it. AmericanStandardAir.com.
And welcome back to the show. I'm Rose Lance Roberts. It is the Real Investment Hour right here as we kind of get our day going. RealInvestmentAdvice.com, that is, of course, where you go to get all the latest reports, updates. Of course, we had a very interesting report out yesterday. Got lots of traction talking about after two major bull markets, why is it that so many retirees are broke? That got a lot of commentary yesterday back and forth, but it's on the website now. Simply go by realinvestmentadvice.com. You get that as well as our Technically Speaking post out already. That's out this morning as well, talking about full market cycles and why those are important to pay attention to. You know, what we were talking about just a moment ago about debt and the problem that debt has caused, not just economically in terms of creating global growth, but also the household debt levels, which have impacted individuals about their ability to, you know, buy houses or to do a variety of other things that they want to do. One of the issues is of course, one of the kind of the headline issues of this is has been student loan debt, right? Student loan debts has now increased to about $1.5 trillion overall. That's up from $500 billion in 2009. Now, from the time that we began issuing out student loan debt, the first student loan, to 2009, the total growth of that was about $500 billion in total. During that initial phase, college tuition remained fairly reasonable in many cases, and student loan debt was rather hard to come by. You had to qualify for it, and it was a loan, right? And banks held these things. And so you had to go to the bank, qualify for student loan, the whole nine yards, and there was a process. You know, back in the day, you also had to put 20% down on a house, right? Skin in the game. There was a requirement to be involved in the issue. And of course, because student loan wasn't running rapid, college tuitions remained reasonably range-bound to what people could afford to pay. So supply and demand, right? So the government decides to come in 2008 under the previous administration and take away student loans and make them a government program. And they exploded because anybody that could fog a mirror could get a loan, kind of like credit cards. So now we're giving student loans to everybody, and surprise, private tuitions surge because colleges say, what, anybody can get a loan to come to college? Okay, our price is going up, and it doesn't matter because if Johnny Joe wants to come to the University of Alabama or the University of Texas or wherever it is, well, I can charge whatever I want because they can get a student loan to pay for it. And of course, student loans have surged, and now it's a problem, right? Because all these kids went out and they took out student loans to go get a college education, generally in a field that doesn't wind up paying a whole lot. They graduate and realize they really can't afford to pay back the loan because their job doesn't pay that much, right? So here's a program coming out from the government, which I actually can get behind. This is one the Trump administration is proposing: borrowing limits for some student loans. The White House is calling on Congress to cap how much graduate students, this is graduate students, and parents of undergraduates can borrow in federal student loans, a proposal that is aimed at curbing rising college costs. That is correct. That is correct. Lower the rate at which people can get money, and colleges will have to lower their tuition. It will curb tuition rates to a level that will meet supply and demand. Look, if kids can't afford to go to college, colleges are a supply-demand issue. So if there's no kids coming in the front door, there's no tuition, there's no jobs. You know, we were talking about yesterday about there's this show on Amazon Prime called The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It's about a lady in the 50s. It's kind of set up like a Broadway play, the way this is done. And anyway, her father, she's trying to become a comedian through a variety of events, and that's a whole different byline in and of itself. But her father is a professor at Columbia University, and they live in this beautiful apartment in New York, right by the Village, right? And it's this massive apartment. So you can only imagine how much it costs, even back in the 50s, even though it was rent-controlled. It's this beautiful apartment in New York City by the river, very uptown. And so I asked my wife at the very beginning of the show, I go, man, how does this Columbia professor afford, because the wife stay at home, right? They apparently have, they're spending like crazy. They're doing all kinds of stuff, living a very nice life. So I'm like, he's a Columbia professor. How does he afford to do this? Well, it comes out later in the episodes, right at the end, is that he's decided to leave his job at Columbia. And the wife looks at him, she goes, you can't. They own the apartment, and because he's a tenured professor. And this is the other problem that we have to fix with college universities. If you want to lower the cost of college universities, you got to get rid of tenure. Tenure says that basically once a professor is tenured, they get paid, period. They can get fired. They can be involved in a sex scandal. It doesn't matter. They still have to get paid, right? So it doesn't matter whether they teach or not. It doesn't matter whether they're a good teacher or not. It doesn't matter whether they're a good professor or not. They still get paid because they're tenured and they cannot be fired, right? So this is a government job. Can't fire a government employee. No, see, that's another problem you need to fix, but that's a whole different byline to this. But lowering the cost of tuition is something that needs to be done. Also, limiting the amount of debt that individuals can go into to get a college education is incredibly important for their ability to, you know, graduate college, get a job, and move on with their life. Right. So what this means for a lot of individuals is, I'm sorry to tell you, but since you're only taking 12 hours a semester at college anyway, and most of those are in studies that somehow revolve around social justice, becoming a social justice warrior, you have time to work a job to pay for part of your college. And so we're going to go back to the days where you actually have to have some skin in the game. And that's a good thing. So good proposal here by the Trump administration we can get behind. Talking about millennials, there was a report out about the 20 most stressful scenarios reported by millennials. And I can agree with some of these. Number one on the list, losing a wallet or a credit card. Yeah, it's very stressful. You know, I had my credit card stolen the other day, and it's very stressful, right? You don't know what's happening to your identity, and, you know, you got to go fix all that. But that's stressful. But falling into the top 20 categories, top 20 scenarios reported by millennials as being the most stressful: arguing with a partner, commute and traffic delays, hate being stuck in traffic, losing their phone, very stressful, arriving late to work. I'm not sure that applies to all millennials.
I'm not sure that's... I'm not sure that's valid.
We have a few in our office. Getting them to work on time is a challenge. That's stressful for us.
Or at all.
Or at all. Slow Wi-Fi, major stressor. If you have slow Wi-Fi, That's a bummer.
Word.
Phone battery dying, forgetting passwords, forgetting their phone charger. Are you getting a sense of the tie here?
Yeah.
Between stress and lifestyle.
A lot of it's self-inflicted.
Yes. Job interviews, extremely stressful.
Okay.
Phone screen breaking. Choosing what to wear.
What?
Yes, choosing what to wear falls into the top 20 most stressful. You know, this is why Einstein was brilliant. He wore the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Just had multiples of the same outfit.
And didn't use a comb.
And didn't use a comb because he didn't have to make it. He didn't spend time thinking about what to wear. He just wore the same thing every day.
Works. Works very well.
Washing dishes. Even though.
Are you serious?
Yes. Because apparently loading them into a dishwasher is stressful. And yes, I can vouch that is very stressful on my children. To apparently is much easier just to throw all the dishes in the sink so that I and my wife can wash them.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So this is one of our challenges at home, which involves putting your dishes in the dishwasher before you get the password to the Wi-Fi. Works very well, mind you.
You know, we had a dishwasher when I was growing up. It was me.
Me, exactly. Actually, yes.
And my younger brothers and sister.
We had Manuel.
Yes.
Manuel labor.
Yes. Manuel labor.
Job security, school loan payments, as we just talked about. Check engine light coming on ranks right up there.
That'll trigger me.
Yeah. Like, oh, man.
Yeah.
So, losing and misplacing keys.
But you know what? The idiot light on the dashboards, that was the beginning. Because back in the day, when we had gauges that would
tell you what was going on.
Analog information.
Yeah, you know, there's the digital thing is all fine and good to a point.
Yeah.
But there is a value in analog gauges.
Just
saying. Get an analog gauge to tell you how fast your Wi-Fi is going. There you go.
The oil pressure gauge and the engine temperature gauge.
Very important.
That's vital stuff. I don't want an orange light.
You know, but you say that, but my mother ran out of gas. Because she was convinced that when the orange light came on that says you're out of gas, that you still had, like, you know, plenty to go. So,
well, there is the story of the woman who ran out of gas because the orange light never came on and had to be told, your car doesn't have an orange light. It's got a gauge.
And when the gauge points at E,
voila,
you're pretty much on the empty side. There you go. All right, other headlines real quick for the day. There are a few things that are going on. This morning, we've got the issue, of course, the Federal Reserve is up on the deck next. That's really kind of the big story for the next 24, 48 hours is going to be what the Fed says tomorrow afternoon in terms of interest rate hikes. Also, Brexit is, you know, right here. As we move into the last 2 weeks of March here, Brexit is going to be fast and furious about what's going to happen with the U.S. Will Parliament actually come up with an idea and a plan for a successful Brexit, or is this going to become another turmoil potentially for the market? So between the Fed and Brexit, those are the two biggest outlying risk right now for the next 2 weeks to the markets. Sentiment, etc. The markets are back to very overbought conditions, which means that small changes in sentiment can have a very rapid effect on asset prices. So again, as we talked about the last couple of days, hey, this is a good time. Take a little bit of profit off the table. We've had nice gains since December. You can lock in some of those gains for the year. And then if we have a pullback in the markets over the next couple of months, which is very likely, that'll give you a better opportunity to buy low so that you can sell high again later. But that's how managing money actually works. If you need help with any of that, be sure and get by our website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Let us know what we can do for you. Our latest reports are out as well. And don't forget our YouTube podcast today at noon on our YouTube channel at realinvestmentadvice.com. Chris Salcedo coming up next. It's a rich man's world.